Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
5 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jared Serbu, and this is On DOD, a brand new show on Federal News Radio, where we're going to do our best to try to bring you in-depth conversations with some of the folks in and around the Defense Department, the people who know it best. And for our very first show, we're lucky to have with us Dave Winogren, DOD's Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer. And he's no stranger to our audience. Folks will have heard you on several other of our programs, and I'm sure seen you speak at various events around town. But there's always a lot to talk about on the business side of DOD. So, Mr. Winogren, very good of you to be with us for our very first show. Thanks.
It's my pleasure, Jared. I'm glad to be here with you.
We're going to try to cover a lot of ground this hour, including DOD strategic management plan, the way you're trying to re-engineer business processes, the efforts to buy big business systems more efficiently, more effectively, and of course the big integrated electronic health record you're building along with VA. You have a big leadership role there. But before we get down into the details, though, of some of those things, maybe it's a good idea to get an introduction of what the DCMO's office actually does on a day-to-day basis. Where do you sit within the overall DOD organization?
Absolutely. Well, in typical DOD fashion, the title Deputy Chief Management Officer is sort of somewhat unique to the Department of Defense. If we were another federal agency, you might look at us as the Undersecretary for Management. So Beth McGrath, my boss, the Deputy Chief Management Officer, and our team is responsible for the business operations of the Department of Defense. So think all of the business process reengineering, business process improvement, big business IT systems, strategic planning for the department, performance measurement, and then a number of these sort of big initiatives that are all about change, like IT acquisition reform, electronic health record, and all the other things that you mentioned in the introduction.
Right. So in Secretary Gates, in one of his exit interviews, said having that full-time DCMO is just really important to good management, roughly paraphrasing, is that everybody down through the department has to know there's somebody who's constantly bird-dogging the management issues and who can walk into the secretary's office at any time and say, listen, things aren't getting done in this area the way they need to be. So I guess I'm wondering how much of that enforcer role over department-wide business operations the DCMO's office finds itself having to play.
So it's a combination that I think all of your audience that's involved in any type of change management work will appreciate, right? The combination of how do you encourage and how do you demand and how do you make all those forces work together. The Department of Defense is a huge place, 3.5 million people spread around the world, austere operating environments, a lot of good people trying to get a lot of important work done. But it is so easy in large organizations, public or private, to fall into the habits of stovepipes of excellence, if you will, right? That verticals, functional leaders, if you will, or horizontals, organizational leaders, will drive to solutions that seem to work for them, but may not be the best answer for the entire enterprise. And so I think Secretary Gates was right that you need an organization whose job it is to help make sure that you really have an enterprise view and that you're aligning functions and processes and goals of the organization so you have a shared vision. And so you can decentralize how you execute things, but you have to have a more common set of approaches, particularly in the fiscally constrained environment that we find ourselves in nowadays.
So having been around DOD for a little while in various roles and various capacities, how new is all of this? How new is the idea of having a deputy CMO that drives that change?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been a lot of talk about it. David Walker, when he was Comptroller General, was really big on the idea, and he coined the title for the department, and Congress was in favor of it and put it into statute. So you see this sort of set of changing rules and regulations that have taken place over, I'll say, the last decade. About 5 or 6 years ago, you know, legislation that said, hey, you got to spend more time focusing on the business of the department. It is a huge enterprise, and you spend billions of dollars a year on, as you point out, big business systems and things like that. So the legislation a few years ago, back in 2005 or so, said, hey, we want the senior leaders of the Department of Defense to actually be focused on these development and modernization efforts and making the right portfolio choices. And then, you know, so that led to the stand-up of the Defense Business Systems Management Committee, chaired by the Deputy Secretary, and the investment review processes, followed by the statute that actually created the Office of the Deputy Chief Management Officer and this imperative to have an organization that helps guide this change. Also statutory guidance about business process reengineering, how important it is to have a focus on process change first before you just become enamored with some new technology. And so there's been this growth. I talked a lot about this in my days as a CIO at the Department of the Navy and then here at DOD that this change management agenda and how you would deal with process and cultural change are the kinds of things you have to take on. And traditionally, organizations often become enamored with what I will call the shiny object of a new technical solution and lose sight of the fact about if you don't optimize your process, just applying technology won't necessarily give you a better result or help you save costs.
At the same time, though, technology is just crucial to doing all of this, right? Talk about some of the ways in which those systems are being integrated into DoD.
Yeah, it is really an interesting nested set. You know, I mean, it's sort of part of the job of it. So change agents have like two interesting jobs. One is to help the organization appreciate that the world has changed. And if you don't yet appreciate that, as you point out, the technological world around us, this idea about service-oriented approaches and Web 2.0 and cloud computing and all the power of mobility and things that are going on right now just really mean that you have to start thinking about doing things differently. If you don't appreciate that, then you just won't get it. And the other challenge for change agents is that you typically go talk to people who are experts in their field, and we'll talk more about healthcare, right? So helping doctors and nurses understand how process change might help them. It's often easy to dismiss the change agent as not knowing as much about your business as you do. So there's sort of two interesting dynamics that you have to keep pushing through. Transparency, alignment, process change first. It's a whole nested set of things that if you can just wrap your head around those things, you really can deliver better results and be a more agile organization.
Technology develops so quickly, and there are things out there that seem to offer promise to solve all of your problems for you all at once. Is it hard, even as someone who's supposed to be handling management, to not get distracted by those things?
It's a great point. So oftentimes, you know, we try to set up these like cookbooks about how to be successful at change. And so I can make the point that says, you know, process change first before you land on technology. But they really are sort of a nested set of ideas that have to work together. I mean, sometimes a technology change is so compelling that, you know, if you were not to be thinking at this moment about how you could leverage it, you would miss a window of opportunity. If you think about these major waves of change, like the advent of personal computers, the emergence of the internet, the proliferation of mobile devices, those have produced profound changes that change the way you do business. I mean, you need look no farther than Haiti disaster relief to see how social networking saved lives, even for organizations like ours, right? And so you have to be... You have to have technology in your sights and technological advancements in your sights, or you're going to miss opportunities to see how you can leverage these waves of change. But at the same time, when it comes to IT systems, so often what happens is, you know, we stop talking about what did you want to get accomplished? And what were the requirements that you really needed to meet? And we jump to that, well, I want to buy that system. And then we become all about that system and stop thinking about if you don't improve how you do a medical transaction or how you do a travel claim, then you're really just trying to apply technology to a cumbersome process.
So one of the, I guess, earlier iterations of management change efforts here in the department was the Business Transformation Agency, one of the hats you wear. It's about to go away, right? What do you feel like BTA accomplished during its lifespan, and in what ways does that translate into what you're doing now in DCMO?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I have several jobs at the moment,
right.
And as you point out, the Business Transformation Agency has been disestablished as part of the ongoing efficiency initiatives that the department is undertaking, and so that's been a lot of hard work. It's all about people, and there are a large number of really dedicated people doing really important work, and their legacy will live on. The way that disestablishment actually has worked is that the missions of the Business Transformation Agency have transitioned. So if you divide their work into two parts, they owned, developed, operated a number of big business systems, and those big business systems have moved down to the Defense Logistics Agency, which already also manages a number of big business systems. So building on the synergies of that organization, putting this other set of portfolio of enterprise business systems together with the set that DLA has already had, and a number of people transitioned with that work, and then the rest of the mission of the Business Transformation Agency coming to the DCMO. When BTA was stood up, there was no such thing as a Deputy Chief Management Officer. So this creation of, as Secretary Gates said, you know, this change agent on the Secretary's staff and the capacity to do work here, you know, has allowed us to bring some of the people from BTA over here to work on what I would describe as the sort of policy and integration and change management aspects of what BTA did. Think the business enterprise architecture, the end-to-end process change work, business process reengineering, portfolio management, investment reviews, and acquisition oversight that they participated in.
We got to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to start getting into some of the more specific areas, such as the integrated electronic health record that you're working a lot on with the Department of Veterans Affairs. We'll be back in a minute with Dave Winogrand, DOD's Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbis.
Force 3 presents great moments in military sports history, celebrating 20 years of serving this nation's great military and government. Force 3, let's do something great. Navy's Ben Fay went from backup to Christmas Day hero during the 1996 Aloha Bowl. Trailing Cal by 10 points in the fourth quarter, Coach Charlie Weatherby turned to his reserve quarterback for a spark. Fay directed two lengthy scoring drives, capping both with touchdown runs. Navy won 42-38 for the school's first bowl victory in 17 seasons.
This is Rocky Cintron, founder and CEO of Force 3. This year, Force 3 is celebrating 20 years of designing innovative technology solutions. But we're not throwing a party or designing a commemorative logo. Instead of congratulating ourselves, we're congratulating the men and women whose bravery and sacrifice has allowed us to pursue our dreams. For 20 years, Force 3 has proudly served the technology needs of the armed services, and we will never take for granted their remarkable service to us. So remember, the next time you see a soldier, say thanks.
This holiday season, give the gift that money can't buy. When you donate blood with the American Red Cross, you give the perfect gift. Another hug, another laugh, another smile, another chance to someone in need of blood. And unlike the latest fashion trend, video game, or golf club, the perfect gift costs nothing but an hour of your time. Visit redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to schedule an appointment today. Give the gift of life and help unwrap a lifetime of memories for patients in need.
Attention federal and military agencies. If you've got communications research or other equipment to launch into geosynchronous orbit, Intelsat General offers this wake-up call. With deep spending cuts in place and more on the horizon, it's never been more important to follow the national space policy and work with an experienced commercial-hosted payload partner who can deliver fast, reliable, and cost-effective access to space. Intelsat General is that partner. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
You may have a big heart, but do you have a strong heart? Balanced nutrition and exercise with regular checkups help build a strong heart. A strong, healthy heart lets you share your big heart with those you love.
Hi, I'm Congresswoman Donna Edwards. Make healthy choices to maintain a strong heart. Eat lots of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, and stay active by biking or walking 5 days a week.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu, and we're at the Pentagon today with Dave Wennergren, DOD's Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer. We're going to get into electronic health records, the integrated health records with VA in just a minute. But before we go there, sticking around with some of the big picture management ideas, one of the cornerstone documents, I guess, that defines what you do, Dave, is the Department's Strategic Management Plan. I understand that's due for an update right about now. Can you talk about how it differs from prior years? What are some of the most significant areas where you see potential for greater efficiencies and effectiveness?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it's a great time to talk about it because it was just signed out on September 20th, our FY fiscal year 2012-2013 version of the Strategic Management Plan. It is one of the statutory requirements from the 2008 Authorization Act. In addition to creating the Deputy Chief Management Officer, there is this congressional requirement to have a Strategic Management Plan for the business of the Department of Defense. So if you sort of view it as a nested set of the quadrennial defense review as the overarching strategic plan for the entire Department of Defense, then the Strategic Management Plan aligns to that and sets out the business imperatives and priorities for the Department of Defense and serves as the top-level strategic plan for business in the department and allows military departments and defense agencies to then flesh out underneath of that a sort of nested set of strategic plans within their organizations. One of the things that I'm really proud about, and one of the things to your point about how it's grown and morphed over the years, is the commitment of the senior leadership team of DOD to its development. A number of meetings with the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Deputy Chief Management Officer, the undersecretaries of military departments who are their chief management officers, the undersecretaries of defense who are the sort of functional owners, if you will, of the department, to actually lay out what are our strategic business priorities and how will we then align activities and measure results against that set of imperatives. And as I said, it's just been published, so you can go find it on the web and take a look at it. It includes seven business goals, and then underneath of those seven goals there are 34 initiatives and over 60 measures and a whole lot of milestones about activities that will be accomplished over the next 2 years so we can actually measure the progress of our plans. The seven goals are strengthen and right-size the total workforce. Number two, strengthen financial management. Build secure and agile information technology capabilities. Increase the buying power of the department. Increase operational installation energy efficiency, re-engineer and use end-to-end business processes, and create agile business operations that support contingency missions. And again, each one of those seven goals has an explicit goal owner who's responsible for the delivery of those goals. Now, within each goal, there are a number of initiatives that involve organizations from across the department, but there is a goal owner. The Department of Defense CIO owns the information technology goal and is using her consolidated roadmap strategy is the way that she will implement that goal, and then we use the Defense Business Systems Management Committee as the governance body to chart our progress. It also serves a number of external purposes like addressing GAO high-risk items and OMB initiatives like performance.gov and the GIPR Modernization Act.
So with each of these seven goals being owned by an explicitly defined person within DOD, I assume there's some accountability that comes along with that these goal owners have to actually execute.
Yeah, there absolutely is, and it's one of the things that I'll probably harp on repeatedly during this conversation. Is that you need a set of goals, you need a strategic plan to drive and align the organization, and then you need explicit performance measures that help you actually measure the progress of your plans. And so the strategic management plan has those measures in them, and those measures begin at the top level for the organization, and then they drive down to how individual organizations contribute, till you get down to how individual leaders and individual employees contribute, and that has to find its way all the way down into performance plans. So you have this nested set of what is important to me and what will I contribute that works my way back up to the overarching and aligned goals for the Department of Defense.
Again, drawing on your experience having been around DOD for a few years, has there been a perceptible change in the amount of attention, amount of care that senior leaders and even rank and file folks give to these management issues?
Yes, I think so. I think there's a really significant commitment to this view about what business goals are we trying to accomplish and how do you do these in an aligned manner. And this recognition that you have to have consistency of message, and you have to use this common language. And so it's very important to have, as I said, an overarching plan for the department, and then to draw upon my past life, underneath of that overarching strategic management plan, the CIO has an information technology plan for the organization, and it's aligned to and speaks to and is common with the overarching plan. And so I think you see senior leaders from across the organization talking about these business change initiatives. I mean, sometimes, the back office stuff isn't quite as sexy as the operational side of the department, but again, it consumes a lot of resources, and you don't get the national defense mission of the organization done if you don't have all the supporting processes in place to support our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marines, civilians who are deployed. So I think there's a strong recognition of that. And again, everything from senior executive service members, performance evaluations, are all tied to how you've explicitly helped achieve the goals of the plan.
Mm-hmm. I want to pivot to some specifics, and starting with the DoD-VA Joint Integrated Electronic Health Record. Would really like to just hear an overview of that entire process so far. You're kind of the captain of that ship, mm-hmm. at least for the moment, as I understand it. What's the status of the relationship between DoD and VA and whatever pilot you're running at the moment?
Yeah, it really is an exciting time, and I don't just say this as a voice of hopeless optimism, even though I am. I really am excited to see what has happened over the last year, and to your point, both for my boss, Beth McGrath, and myself, this is a huge consumer of our time. We spend more time on this initiative than anything else right now, and it really is a dramatic change. So already DoD and VA had been sharing, more information than any two healthcare providers in the world, and so there was a lot of information being exchanged, but it was an information exchange between these different legacy systems, and so DoD needing to modernize its health record systems, VA needing to modernize its health record systems, late last fall, early winter, this serious set of conversations between the leadership of both organizations and this commitment between the two secretaries, the two deputy secretaries, the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the leadership team in both organizations that, our military members and veterans would be better served if we did this together rather than trying to figure out how to do it separately and glue things together. Mm-hmm. And so this set of agreements that have been codified in a series of meetings between then-Secretary Gates and Secretary Shinseki, to actually agree on how we would move forward with this. And I think it's really exciting. It will change the way a lot of healthcare service is delivered because it really does speak to a lot of the administration's priorities and ours about modular approaches and how to do things in a more agile way that allow more innovation and more people to be in the game. And so if you indulge me, I'll take you for a quick walk
what it
will look like. So if you get this right, the power of a service-oriented world is that you can, you could create a common data model. And so as I described the story, these are the things that we are now focusing our time and attention on together as one team. And as you point out, I've been named as the interim program executive for getting this delivered until such time as we can recruit for a permanent program executive. So, a common data model. Aligning to national standards and not having to do data interoperability, but actually moving ourselves to a common data model across DoD and VA. VA will move into our DISA Defense Enterprise Computing Centers, so we'll have co-located facilities as we move to a common logical data model. So we'll move into the same facilities and then into the same data model. A service-oriented approach, so imagine all the things you know about SOA and how we'll have an enterprise service bus and a common open architecture that's understood by everyone so that anybody who provides medical applications capabilities can understand how they would plug in. So applications will be bought as individual capabilities, or perhaps sets, but not as one massive, health record system from one company top to bottom with mm-hmm. proprietary data. So open data aligned to national standards and open architecture that everyone understands, and so anybody can be in the game of offering, I can do pharmacy or laboratory or radiology, very well, and a development environment where you can come and demonstrate how it will work. And then a common presentation layer. So regardless of where you work as a clinician, as a physician or a nurse or a practitioner, that you can see the same look and feel. So you could be at a VA hospital or a DoD medical treatment facility. You come into it, you see the same look and feel. And that's what we'll be delivering over the next several years. And I'm really excited about it because it speaks to a whole lot of the things that we've already talked about, this imperative for process change first. So how can so taking a look at how VA does business and how we do business, optimizing and aligning those processes so that you can buy common applications. We have mapped the as-is process from the moment of accession of a military member through the end of their life as a veteran. And now are building out the 2B models about what does pharmacy really mean? And the business practices for pharmacy are different in the two organizations. We've come up with a 2B model about how you would align those processes so that you can go buy a common pharmacy application and it will work for both of us. And these tenets of process change first to help figure out how to deliver the best solution are part of the things we've already been talking about, and they're going to drive a big difference, I think, in the healthcare business. This will be a huge help to the administration and the Office of the National Coordinator as they drive for healthcare standards across the nation. And I think it will also help to achieve the sort of agility and innovation that we all seek about letting everybody who wants to play understand how you could be in the game and how you could deliver a capability that we could use.
You've alluded to some of this, but I think it's really important to point this out. You are not building a healthcare record system from the ground up that will be completed and then will be imposed on both departments all at once. This is kind of a gradual process, right?
Yeah, it will be. You know, what you will do is there are certain things that are happening. You know, the going in position, you have to build this common platform. I mean, we hear people use these cliches all the time, but, you know, if you think about the model of iPhones and Androids and things like that, right, that if you have a common understood platform that's open and available, then people can understand how they can build to it. And so the initial work in the year ahead is all about, you know, the data model, putting the data model into place, having everybody understand the data model, buying the enterprise service bus, having that in place, having people understand what does it mean when we say, like, build to open APIs and having an open architecture that everybody understands. And the first instantiation of this presentation layer, this graphical user interface that was designed by clinicians from both sides to have a look and feel that they wanted to see that helps them do efficacy of care and ensure patient safety and things like that. Putting all those things into place, then you begin to be able to say, so now I'd like to go buy applications to help me with these components of the electronic health record. And so, you know, we started talking about those, everything from immunizations to emergency department care, lab, radiology, pharmacy. And so you begin to build those out. And then we'll be transitioning off of our legacy systems. I mean, this is a massive undertaking, so it will be several years in the making. But we actually imagine that people will be seeing demonstrable results because of this drive to do things in 6, 12, 18-month increments, mm-hmm. you know, much earlier than the, you know, several years from now when we actually start turning off the legacies.
Uh-huh.
It's our belief that, you know, the more people that are in the game, the more innovation and good ideas and competition and all those kinds of things happen. And so, you know, at the most basic level, you should look at open source as a sort of source of supply. If all the standards, if all the architecture, if everything's out there and available for anybody to be able to innovate on, then, you know, good things happen. And so as we go and look through, you know, the market basket of applications that will become part of the electronic health record, we'll be interested in hearing from anyone.
I'm going to display my ignorance on how this whole process works, but when I think of open source, I think of a bunch of volunteer coders coming together to write a web browser, to build Firefox, to write a driver that makes a particular piece of hardware work with Linux or something. In a situation like this, who are the contributors to a huge government system like this?
Well, I think, you know, the practical way of looking at it is that at the heart of open source is that you get to see the source code, right? And so, you know, open source could be developed, as you point out, like so much of the Internet was developed by a bunch of people collaborating together from afar. But open source can be a group of innovators at a small company that create some new set of code, but they contribute it to the repository so that anybody can see it and reuse it. And so the it's more about how it's developed and how it's able to be seen than necessarily it's only done by some mass, you know, the wisdom of the crowds kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're overdue for a break here, so we'll pause and come back in just a second. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the electronic health record system because there is a lot of action there, I think, and then we'll get into some of the more specific areas of the way Mr. Winogrand's office is driving business change throughout the Defense Department. This is Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serville.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW Basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
So you blew it. You ate the donut. You slept in and skipped your workout. You had that second helping, went a little overboard at the buffet, hit the candy jar at the office a little too hard. You forgot to put safety first. You didn't eat your vegetables. You didn't even open that bottle of vitamins you bought. You accidentally left your gym bag at home. Your favorite machine was broken at the gym. Instead of your water bottle, you chugged a 2-liter of soda. You couldn't help yourself. You had a craving, or you simply couldn't resist. But you know what? It's okay. two steps forward and one step back is still one step forward, one slip-up isn't going to undo all that good work. So don't be afraid to embrace your setbacks and do whatever it takes to keep trying. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe the more you keep trying, the better chance you have to turn bad habits into good ones, because we think it's never too late to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that can save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. This is On DoD, and we're at the Pentagon today with Dave Wennergren, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer for the Defense Department. We left off talking a little bit about, not just a little bit, a lot of it, about electronic health records and the integrated approach that DOD and VA are taking. I want to ask a couple more questions about that, mainly with regard, for starters, to the interplay between what DOD and VA are doing, how that plays into possibly the future of electronic health records in the private sector and in public hospitals outside DOD and VA, what you're learning from them, what you feel like you have to contribute back to the rest of the healthcare industry.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot to be learned, and that's why we're working really closely with the Office of National Coordinator, the Office of Science Technology Policy at the White House. And if you think about it, just as we're seeing across the technology world and landscape right now, this idea about, you know, you don't have to necessarily, sometimes it makes sense to have a big single system, but much of the time nowadays it makes more sense to be able to have modular components where, you know, to the example we were using before, like, so I have a super duper pharmacy system, maybe my laboratory system isn't quite as good, and so why, or I'm using a data model that is proprietary and isn't available to be shared, and so why would you necessarily want to have to be tightly coupled if you don't have to be. So I think one of the things, because DOD and VA is so big, and, you know, will be that we can help promote this idea about modular things that plug in and are built to open standards and open interfaces so that, you know, you can get what you need and use it. So I think this idea about moving away from the typical EHR system, which has in the past often been implemented as like a company's single proprietary solution for everything, you know, allows us to be much more open about how we do business and allows a business model, a different business model, but still a good business model for our industry partners. I think it's also helping us, the lessons that we learn are helping to address some of the concerns that we have nationally. Standards, right? If you tend to share, if you look at the broader DoD family, you know, not just the military members, but the families and retirees, you know, over half of the care is provided by private sector partners. So, you know, so this national issue that that's being worked about, how do you align to standards so you can share better between private practices and private practices with DoD and VA is really important. And it's driven by this alignment and understanding of what it means to be committed to standards. Other issues like identity are huge things that we've worked on for quite a long time. And, you know, I'm thrilled that the Department of Defense and Department of Veterans Affairs have agreed to, you know, a common identifier for an individual from the moment they assess in the military through their life as a veteran so that, you know, you have a common record and all you're doing throughout their life is adding information as they see somebody, whether they see somebody in theater or at a DoD facility or at a VA hospital, information is being added to the record, and that they can get access to their record for their own use, right? And so all these things are important now, you know, so how do you address identity so you can make sure that you can know when somebody's been treated in a private facility and add that to the compendium of care and knowledge base about the individual too. So I think there's a lot of lessons learned that we will uncover that we will share and can help others too.
Is that single identity system already in place, or is that still coming down the road as part of the development of the system?
Some of the, you know, we talked about the agreements that we've reached together as a department, as the two departments, and, you know, there's a lengthy list of them, but that is one of them that, you know, DoD has. It's called our EDIPI, if you love acronyms, which, of course, we do in DoD, right? And you know, so we have a unique identifier for everyone in the Department of Defense. It's the basis for your identity on your PIV card. It's the basis for your identity in the healthcare system. And VA has agreed to adopt that as, you know, the common identifier throughout, you know, throughout the life of a veteran, too. And so so a lot of work going on in that space, both about the identity of the patient and the identity of the provider so that you can move to a world where, you know, based upon, you know, it really is Wennergren that's sticking his card into the machine and attributes about Wennergren that are known, then, you know, the system can display information that I'm entitled to see, helping to protect privacy, but also helping to make sure that the right information gets to me to be able to care for the patient who's there with me.
You talked about healthcare record systems largely being proprietary throughout history, but that's true not just with healthcare record systems in DoD, in fact, across the government, right? I mean, that's in what ways does this possibly pave the way for doing those big systems throughout the department differently, or do we have to wait and see how this goes before we can say that?
No, I'll do a plug for my old team on the office of the CIO that, you know, the CIO team at DoD has been pushing for years now this idea about if you could decouple data from the applications that need to use that data, you can move to a world of innovation and speed and information sharing unlike anything we've seen before. And it is happening all over the place. I mean, you know, this isn't the only place. This is a big initiative. But, you know, I used to talk a lot about maritime domain awareness and how this idea about vessels coming into commercial harbors and how information was contained in legacy databases belonging to Coast Guard, Navy, the intelligence community, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Transportation, and how they recognize that, you know, if you expose your data and made it visible, accessible, understand it, and trusted, that you could, you know, mash it up and overlay it on things like Google Earth, and I can stick my common access card in any DoD computer now and go see, you know, every commercial harbor and what's coming into it and this sort of, you know, amalgamation of information from across these multiple sources. And so you're seeing that more and more across the functional areas, business and warfighting of the department, about how information exposed and made available allows you to do things in a much more rapid manner.
I want to move a little bit to business process reengineering, something that DCMO's office is heavily, heavily, heavily involved in driving. And last we heard there were a couple processes that were leading the charge there, hire to retire and procure to pay, that were the most well-developed. Can you give us a little progress report on those efforts and what areas might be ripe for attention next?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thrilled to hear you using our end-to-end terms like hire to retire and procure to pay. We have made
I'm going to ask you to explain what they are in a minute. I'm just pretending like I understand them right now.
Well, you did well. You know, So our business enterprise architecture, which is again available, you can go check it out. Business enterprise architecture is focused on the fact that these end-to-end processes exist. So hire to retire, as an example, is, you know, all of the things that go into an end-to-end process from the moment you assess through your retirement. And so you touch on a number of functional areas. You touch on personnel, you touch on pay, you touch on a bunch of different things, right? In the past model of the world, we would have had functional leaders demanding how a business system would develop their functional piece. Or you would have had, and I will call those the verticals, and you would have had horizontals like the Army, Navy, Air Force, or defense agencies saying, well, this is the way I want to do it for myself. And the whole purpose of the end-to-end process work is to say, hey, we need to look at this end-to-end process. So how do we watch something from procurement through payment, from hiring through retirement, and actually optimize that process? We talked about travel, right? I mean, you know, DoD has a travel system now where I get paid electronically in 48 hours. I mean, it is a great sort of accounting mechanism that did away with paper-based processes. But it has a lot that could still be done to it in terms of how it improves and makes it easy for me to book a flight and do all those sort of facing services that you do in a web-based way if you go to Expedia or Orbitz or some service like that. And so if you can look at the end-to-end process, you could optimize it and you could start to address reasons why do we do it differently here versus there, come up with common and improved processes. And again, then you could, you know, lay the right technology on top of it. We talked about electronic healthcare, and that's a place where you can see being demonstrated. I mean, an incredible amount of work by physicians on both sides about, so why do business processes for pharmacy, why are they different from DoD and VA? Are there reasons why they have to be different, or is it just because we've each developed processes over time? And if it's the latter, then, you know, how can we align them so that you could find a common solution that would do the work for both of us and help to avoid issues like how do you do drug checking and drug allergy checking and prescription filling and all those kinds of things that if you didn't align your process, you know, could create issues of patient safety. And so you see it more and more, this adoption of this idea about do the process change work first. It's actually legislated now, right? So, you know, you can't do a development or modernization effort of any size in the department unless you can demonstrate, and this is one of the sort of enforcement actions of DCMO, is to review that demonstration of that you've actually done business process reengineering first.
So DCMO owns these processes from end to end, I'm assuming, right? But is that right or wrong?
I would say differently. I would say, you know, so it's our job to ensure that we have optimized end-to-end processes. But end-to-end processes are actually owned by this interesting governance of verticals and horizontals. So as an example, procure to pay. We've formed the team to optimize the processes about procure to pay. The two leadership champions are the Undersecretary for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, who owns the contracting processes, procurement processes, and the Undersecretary of Defense for Comptroller, who owns the financial processes of procure to pay. And so those two leaders together are championing this process change team that involves representation from the military departments, who are the primary users of the procure to pay team, to actually come up with how would you do things better. So if you look at these, it's sort of like the strategic management plan. You need a leader, or sometimes two, that work together because of the nature of the process. You need business process change people, so Lean Six Sigma experts that we help contribute, and then people who are actually users of the process to be involved in the process change work.
We're going to take another break, come back with one more segment with Dave Wintergreen, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer here at DoD. This is Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Servio.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity? Working on a cloud computing initiative? Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
Hey, Lucas.
Hello, Angie. You ready for dinner?
Yeah. Hey, is that a new radio for your ride?
Sure is. Went to Walmart for the Pioneer DEH-44 HD with HD radio built in.
HD radio?
HD radio is digital broadcast radio. Digital sound, new channels, no subscription fees.
From Walmart?
Great values there. Only $120 for a Pioneer HD radio receiver.
Forget dinner. Let's get my car and head to Walmart.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, MJ Jacobson, Vice President of Communications for National Geographic. She is going to tell us about her involvement with the Children's Charities Foundation and the BB&T Classic, which takes place this Sunday, December the 4th at the Verizon Center. For ticket information, visit ccfdc.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
With more than 550,000 federal government workers eligible for retirement in the next few years, it's imperative industries build cooperation with the next generation of leaders in government. Join AFSCEA Bethesda on December 8th for a panel of rising stars from USDA, NASA, DHS, GSA, and the RAC Board to hear their perspective on cloud computing, mobile IT, data center consolidation, and strengthening program management at the Bethesda North Marriott. Register today at afsceabethesda.org/DEC breakfast.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu at the Pentagon today with Dave Wennergren, DoD's Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer, for one more segment. And, you know, our listeners and readers know you from your life in the CIO community before you came over to this area of business transformation and management change. What's the transition to that world been like so far? What challenges have you seen? What's the biggest learning curves? What do you miss about the CIO world?
Yes, I've successfully made the leap from information officer world to management officer world, and frankly, it's not as big a leap as you know some people might think. I mean, it's been a wonderful opportunity for me. It was a nice step up and a good time to take on new adventures. I always like new challenges, and I have a great boss. If you haven't had a chance to meet her yet, Beth McGrath, just been super leader in this field, and we've been friends for a long time. So all that was wonderful, but it is probably more importantly to the question the kind of work that I've enjoyed most and is the kind of work that I think, regardless of whether you're a CIO or a CMO, needs, if you're going to be effective, these have to be like on your plate of things you're going to take your time to put attention to. Process improvement, change management, strategic planning, performance management. I mean, these are the things that help you get things done. And so, it's a soapbox that I've been on for a while now, the importance of recognizing priorities and polarities of things. I talked a lot in my CIO life about secure information sharing, that if you focus only on security or only on information sharing, you wouldn't be good at either, right? And you would thwart the other. And so recognizing that there are polarities of things that you have to be managing together is just as applicable to information security and applicable to these end-to-ends that have a horizontal and a vertical component to them. Recognizing and addressing cultural change and recognizing that the world around us has change and not being fearful of internet-based capabilities, but instead figuring out how to use them effectively, letting process optimization happen and have that inform how you're going to do technology solutions, being aligned as organizations and recognizing the importance of performance measures to bring transparency, measure progress, sustain momentum, and build trust. So those are the things that that I yakked about then and I continue to yak about now.
So you've got some priorities coming up over the next 6, 12, 18 months. What are those biggest ones? What should we be watching out for?
Yeah, well, I'll do two flavors to them. The one is, we've talked about a lot of big initiatives. So there's a lot of work to be done. The Department of Defense still has a number of big business systems that need to be implemented effectively, as well as adopting this more modular approach for the future. We will spend a lot of time on electronic health records going forward. We will spend a lot of time on the reform agenda, how to improve the speed and the modular approach to how you do IT acquisitions and these end-to-end processes and getting them in place. So there's all that kind of stuff. But there's also this sort of more, like I'll say, slightly more philosophical but really important set of things that have to be done. So if we can move away from internal competing interests to shared goals, particularly in fiscally constrained times, we just can't afford to go our own way. So having a very aligned organization is going to be a crucial task for us. Creating an environment that spends the needed time and energy on process and cultural change rather than just becoming enamored, as we said, with the shiny box, the shiny object of a technical solution. Fostering a culture of innovation, agility, and speed. These modular approaches allow you to do things with great rapidness and a speed never before dreamed of. Creating a shared alignment and accountability from the strategic management plan at the top of the stack all the way down to, the individual's performance plan, and having those feed each other is crucially important. And then I would say providing transparency. Transparency is so important. Getting the right information to decision makers to improve effective decision making, to align efforts of these many organizations that compose the Department of Defense, and to build trust. If you operate in low trust environments, you pay a huge price in terms of speed, time it takes to get work done, and the cost of getting things done. And being visible and candid about where you are and what you're doing and where you intend to go and are you getting there does amazing things to help build trust in an organization and give it an alignment of thought and purpose and speed. So in the end, it's all about creating and maintaining the right sense of urgency.
Just to wrap up, we haven't talked in too much detail about the reasons behind why this is important. You described yourself as an eternal optimist. You're clearly passionate about what you're doing, and I don't think that could possibly be the case if you were simply responding to congressional mandates to manage DOD better or GAO suggestions to manage DOD better. What motivates you? What makes you excited to go to work every day?
Well, I've been so honored as you pointed out, for a long time, to have worked for the Department of Defense and to be surrounded by young men and women who have chosen careers of service and sacrifice, deployed far from home in harm's way, defending the nation and our freedom every day. And so if that's not enough of motivation for you, then you probably don't want to come and work here. But it certainly is enough motivation for all the people that I see. And so there's this national defense imperative that the department is supposed to carry out. And if you're wasting your time on a bunch of support functions and not getting care to the right person to give them the equipment, the supplies, the support that they need to get their job done, then you're hampering this commitment and this sacrifice that they're making. And so if you can get the business side of the organization right, you can support the warfighting forces of the nation, and that's a great reason to be an optimist today.
It is indeed. Dave, thanks again so much for being our first guest. Dave Wintergreen, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer, DOD. I'm Jared Servio.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.